Lamar.
Mackenzie.
Oh, I liked it. You did it. Okay.
It's weird being on the other side of
it. I was going to say, right? It's like a challenge. You got to figure it out how to match it. Okay, so I have a question for you today. And it's so timely, not just because of this movie, but just because I happened to have this exact conversation last night, weirdly. So it inspired me to ask you, what is your best strip club story?
Just between us girls?
Just between us girls.
Nobody's going to hear it.
Nobody will know.
So I want to say right off the bat, the first, we're not giving anything away right away, but the first like 15 minutes of this film is mostly in the strip club. And I was sitting there checking off my strip club bingo card because all the phrases that they're approaching the men with, and it's like, oh, you don't have cash? Let's go to the ATM. Heard that one before. All these. So this movie is scary accurate. We'll get more into that. But I do have a story. I don't have a ton of strip club stories. I think I've been to a total of maybe
five. I have
five.
So many.
I think you are, outclassing me in this department. So
keeping it classy over here, guys.
I've been to maybe five in my life, and probably the best story was the first one that I went to. So I was 19 in college, and myself and three of my friends decided to drive from New Jersey up to Montreal because we could drink up there. And it was also St. Patrick's Day week, so spring break.
I was going to say, under 21 in the strip club is not as fun. So, okay, this makes sense.
We went up to Montreal for spring break, basically. We're up there for 3 or 4 days. And then one of them, we decided to go to a strip club. And the fun fact about this is my first ever, I got my first credit card, and I'd never had debt before. And the very first purchase that I ever
debt
made
that you incurred
a credit card in Montreal at a strip club. So I had never been to a strip club before. I didn't know how things worked. I don't know the pricing system. I think it's just assumed. So we sit down next to the main stage. Buddy of mine says, hey, pick whoever you want, like, I'll pay for your first dance, blah blah blah. Pick a girl. We go back to the private room. She starts dancing.
Sure.
Again, I don't know how this works. So the song ends and she says, do you want me to keep going? I think, yes, I would love for you to keep going. That sounds great.
You're like, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you to stop. So she does another song. Song ends. You want me to keep going? Yes, I'm having a great time. I think we should do this forever.
Oh my God.
Second girl walks into the room, says, do you want us to both dance for you for a little while? Why the hell not? That sounds great. So it kept going like that for probably 20, 25 minutes. Wow. And then I ended up owing like $200 for a single dance, basically, because I didn't know how this all worked. I do not have $200 on me.
You're dating yourself, because that did not sound as bad as I expected.
Oh, no, I was not bawling out, and I think they could tell that. But so I, at the time, like I said, I did not have this money. I had never used my credit card before, so I was like, I don't want to use a credit card, and I don't know how this is, blah, blah, blah. So walk back. I say, hey, I got to talk to my friend because he said he was going to get my first dance. I walk back to the main table. My friend is there. The other dude who had offered was actually getting a dance in a private room. So he's like, he's back there somewhere, man. You got to find. The girls are just following me. They're like, we're getting our money.
They're like, you're not will gonna be paying us.
Yes.
Don't you fret. Oh.
So I walk back to the hallway of private rooms to try and find my friend. And at this point, I'm just thinking of how I can get out of this because I don't have the money. So we're walking down and I open the beaded curtain and there's my friend Snarf, his nickname is Snarf, getting a dance. And he goes, what's up, Lamar? Right in front of the dancers. And I'm like, and they're like, is that him? I was like, no, I don't know that guy. We just keep walking. Like, he looks up from his dance, says my name. And I'm like, no, that's not him. Eventually I go back to the table, sit next to my other friend, Matt, and I'm looking at the bouncer. He's like, dude, you should pay. And I was like, I can outrun those bouncers. I'm faster than them. I know I am. And he put his hand on my shoulder and just said, you shouldn't do that. Just pay them. So my first ever piece of credit card debt was at a strip club in Montreal. And I spent probably like 15, 20 years of my life in some form of debt or another. And it all started there. So that is my strip club story.
They were the gateway drug, man.
Yeah, they'll get
you. Yikes. They will get you. They will get you. Wow. I love that you were actually contemplating running. Like, it sounds like you
just
were legitimately considering it.
In my head, it made so much sense. Yeah. Just like, I'm pretty fast. I'm spry.
What about you? Well, I'm glad your friend warned you not to do that because, not a great plan. Well, it's funny. I've had a lot of strip club stories, for better or worse. I did take one of my best friends to a strip club for his 18th birthday, for example. Like, I, have taken guys out for, their respective 18th, 20th, 21st birthday, whatever.
It's a good friend there. Good female friend right there.
I am a solid wingman, actually. Both of these were wingman situations. And I was like, we're going to get it done for you. So yeah, if you ever need a wingman, I'm your girl. But I also, in my old industry, not where I currently work, so, you know, no judgment. But in my old industry, I would take out a lot of clients. And one of the many places that we took them on a semi-regular basis were various strip clubs, and specifically in Miami, because we would go to Miami every quarter. We went to Miami. We would take people out.
Now, is this just part of the Dave and Buster's culture that you guys were going to the strip club? Like, or I assume it's that one.
You know how they do it at the Dave and Buster's. Yeah. No, they, we would take them as like super classy thing. Actually, it would be like a flow. I found this beautiful, actually made friends with this DJ at this club in Miami, and he had this great jazz club. And so I would take people there every quarter. Like, we had a setup and we would take people on a yacht, and it was a whole thing. But then the problem is the conference that we were always going to was actually closer to Fort Lauderdale. So we would, at the end of the night, drive back to Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood area. And there's some seedy places between Miami and Fort Lauderdale is what I would say. And we ended up becoming regulars of this one particular strip club that is between the two towns. And imagine me by myself wrangling 8 to 12 grown men,
horny,
drunk men who work in some form of construction adjacent. Automation was my industry. So we were working with architects, builders, developers, GCs. And then sometimes, like, they would bring some of their techs to this because they wanted to treat them. So it's a hodgepodge of people. Bunch of dudes, all drunk, all broing out pretty hard. Yeah. We go to this strip club that we've been at a few times. And I will say, I actually find it kind of entertaining. The people watching at strip clubs is fascinating. And I, you know, and I've, yes, people have bought me dances and it's a great time, fabulous, whatever. Not into the ladies myself, so not as exciting, but still a good time.
But I mean, we've mentioned this on the pod before, of just objectively, women's bodies are more attractive than men. They're better to look at. So it's just like, it's a beautiful experience, you know?
It's a fun experience seeing, you know, and like also the feats of acrobatics. Like, they're doing some impressive things.
It's like Cirque du Soleil, yeah.
It's very impressive. So anyway, but these guys are trashed, right? I'm getting them bottle service. They're having a great time. Guys do what you do. They go to the back and they get their little dance. And talk about a bingo card, right? This guy goes back there for the private dance, does his thing. He's not the classiest fella I've ever taken to one of these. And I swear, not 10 minutes later, we hear yelling, screaming from the back of the private dance area. The whole club can hear it. It's a pretty big strip club, too. It was very loud. And him and this lady are having a showdown about how he didn't get what he paid for, and she has robbed him, and it was a whole fucking shit show, and it was like your typical shit. His pants are, you know, in a questionable position, all the things. And so I have to go up to the bouncer, who is dragging him out by his collar, and I have to stop him. And he knows me, unfortunately. I've been here a few times. So I go to the bouncer and I'm like, my guy, you know the deal. I bring these people. I will never bring him here again. I was like, he's from out of state. He will never come here again. I got $500 for you. Just let us leave. And he was like, you have 5 minutes to get everyone else and get the fuck out. So then I am tracking down all the other guys in their little private dances, my dudes at my little alcove. I'm closing out the tab and I'm hurling $500 at this guy and taking us out into the night with no ride. And we're all standing in the parking lot for the next 20 minutes waiting for our ride to come take us all back to our hotels. It was a situation. So, you know, don't outnumber yourself that way is what I would maybe say. That was too much for those were too many people, too much
going
on.
You're going through a lot of the same stresses in that story of sort of the folks trying to wrangle the characters in this movie. I feel like you and Tauros probably have a lot in common, you know?
Tauros and I feel very similarly. Yes, we had a very similar night.
Yeah.
So, you know, just get the ratios tighter is what I would recommend as a pro strip club hostess, basically.
Good stories.
What a time. All right, let's go. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lem. because I like the short version of my name. Don't call me Lamar anymore. It doesn't have any meaning. I'm American.
That will make sense in a minute, y'all. Yeah. We'll get there. We'll get there. Hey, Lem. Nice to meet you. We are, if you couldn't tell, continuing Oscars month with Anora, which is a multi-nominee for the Oscars this year. Best Picture, Best Directing, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Original Screenplay, and Editing. So quite a run on the noms for this one, for sure.
And all well-deserved. This movie was really damn good. The performances are great. It did not do anything that I expected it to do, but I really hope this wins at least a couple of those.
I think it'll win a couple, for sure. I don't know if it'll win all the things. I will say we're going to get into it. My only bone to pick with that list of awards is editing. And not I think it's well edited. Don't get me wrong on the whole. Just for length. I think there were opportunities, is what I would say. But anyway, before we get into all of that, what are we drinking?
We are drinking a tasty concoction made by At Craft World, as always. And I needed this because we are both very tired today. We won't talk about what we did on Saturday. We weren't at the strip club last night. I'll say that.
We were not, we promise.
But the fact that this has coffee liqueur in it makes me very happy because it is needed. So we've got 2 ounces of Di Serrano, half an ounce of coffee liqueur, half an ounce each of lime, lemon juice, and simple syrup. And then did you throw an egg white in yours? That was advised.
I think he did. I didn't make it.
I'm getting pretty good at doing the eggshell, egg white thing to get the yolk out. So shake that sucker up, put it into a coupe, and we are calling this The Price of Bliss. Multiple meanings on that one.
So many meetings. And y'all, this was like maybe the longest riff session on a cocktail name in podcast history, but we did it. We got here. So yeah, cheers. Step.
Cheers.
That is tasty. Yeah. He had to have done the egg white because mine's pretty foamy on the top.
It's like the froth. Like, yeah.
So very delicious. Thank you for that recipe and pick me up. We're going to dig into some basics before we get into spoiler zone. I don't expect everyone to have seen this, but also it did really well in theaters and a lot of people have seen it. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear how many people we end up having seen this already before they listen to the app.
We got it on Prime for like $10, but you have that spreadsheet. It's not shown anywhere for free, right? Or streaming services. Okay.
No, not right now. Not for free. It's definitely rentable. And I think they had a couple theaters for a hot second that did another run on it, but it was very brief. It was very brief and it's already out again. So yeah, but this is Anora again, 2024 film. This is rated pretty highly, 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 93% critics, 90% audiences. So super fresh. And this is done by writer and director Sean Baker. He's done a couple things you may or may not have seen. Similar style and similar, I guess, main character or subject matter in some cases. So he's done The Florida Project.
Did you see that one?
Yeah.
I've heard so much about it, but I haven't sat down and watched it.
I won't go into it too much, but I do think that there are some tendrils here from The Florida Project as well. But Red Rocket, he also did in Tangerine, same thing, like Tangerine especially, one in particular. But yeah, he is a very distinct style, I feel.
This was my first experience with him, but I think I'm going to seek out more of his stuff. It gave me the same vibes as, like, not quite the Safdie brothers, but a little bit of that, like Uncut Gems and Good Time with Robert Pattinson. So I kind of want to now go dig into more of Sean Baker's stuff.
Yeah, I don't find it as stressful as Uncut Gems, for example, that like never fucking comes down and gives you a breather. But yeah, I see what you're saying for sure. The producer I wanted to call out here because she's important to the development of our lead actress's experience. So she's Samantha Kwan. She is actually Sean Baker's wife. So she's actually also produced Florida Project, Tangerine. But funnily enough, and I just thought this was a fun factoid for y'all, she also is in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And she's a very kind of ancillary character, but she's like this annoying, perky editor who like writes these really dark and twisty editorials, but then she's like, but you know, upbeat was like her line at the end of every single one that she pitches. So if you ever see that movie, that's her. I also wanted to call out the cinematographer here, Mr. Drew Daniels. I think that's worth a mention in this particular case for a number of reasons, but this is beautifully shot. Yes. And it's a complicated shot because it's mostly at night, right? I mean, there's a few day scenes, of course, and some of them are pretty long, but the bulk of the action like happens at night. And in these, like you said, these places with no light, right? These like strip club type of places with no light. So I thought it was worth the shout out. He does some incredible work here.
Yeah.
All right. Our major cast and crew is Mikey Madison. So she was again nominated for Best Actress as a result of this film. She plays Annie. She won't go by her full name, as we said. She's been in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was one of the like Manson kids who's mm-hmm. going to like do some murder. And speaking of murder, she's also in Scream. So yeah. I couldn't place her, though. I didn't like go looking for it, but I couldn't remember who she played. But she was in Scream 5.
So okay. Won't spoil anything in there. But she's not like she's kind of one of the ones that's in the background for a lot of like she's in a few scenes, yeah, but she was very good in that with the time she had. So.
Okay. Yeah. No spoilers, guys. Don't worry. All right. I am not going to do this right. I just want to warn everybody. We're about to get into some names that are very difficult to pronounce. And I did, in fact, take Russian, actually. So you would think I would be better at this. But the things I remember from my Russian are Nyet and Privyet. So that's it. That's all I got.
But like, so I mean, anyway. Props to them for casting actual, you know, Russians, Armenians, the people who can actually pull off because so much of this film is in Russian or in other languages. So it's like a lot of subtitles and then they're switching back and forth from it. And I think you need people who actually speak those languages fluently to make that happen.
Yeah. And quick shout out on that. She, Mikey Madison, learned Russian for this role. She's one of the few that's not actually Russian, but she did learn it for the role. So that's, you know, again, the effort, impressive. Mark Adelschisten. I don't know. Adelschisten? I can't tell you. But he plays Ivan. And he's been in a couple things. A lot of these folks mostly done Russian film work, just to be clear. This is Strana Sasha is what he's most well known for. And then also was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the TV reboot. So I haven't seen that, y'all. I feel like it's offensive. If you've seen the original, I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't want to ruin my image of the first one, so I haven't seen it. Y'all tell us if it's good. And then Yura Borisov, who plays Igor, he's the one who was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He's like,
I was so
guy here.
Fucking happy because we were watching the film and he was just, I didn't look up a lot of research in advance. And as the film's going on, he's just growing on me and growing on me. And then you see the subtleties in his performance where he's not even delivering a ton of dialogue, but it's just facial mannerisms.
His face. Yeah. He plays with his face. And I couldn't agree more.
He's so happy when I saw that he got the nom. I went, oh,
yeah,
shit,
he's not
that
somebody
like really
that
cool.
You would have expected. Yeah, I agree. I mean, not that you shouldn't. I just mean like you wouldn't. He kind of has a subtle part here. And so it's surprising, but he does a great job. So he's done also, again, some Russian film work, but he did do Kalashnikov, which is what you think it is. It's the story of the soldier who invented the Kalashnikov AK-47 assault rifle. So I haven't seen it, but apparently he did really well in that. He's also done Compartment Number 6, which is actually pretty pretty popular, pretty highly rated as well. So a couple things, if you're interested in some Russian cinema, go check him out. And then Karin Karagulian is Toros, my homie, who understands the wrangling of all the childrens around the strip club. Also has worked with Sean Baker a lot. So did Tangerine, did Red Rocket, also has done Starlet, different film. So he's kind of been around the block and he kind of gives that energy in this movie too, of like he's the like tenured older actor guy on the set. And it comes through, I think, in Toros as well. So Vasya Tovmasyan plays Garnick. He has been in one thing and I have no idea what it is. It's called Stone Cage. Cool.
They need to put him in more because he crushes it in this.
He's so funny. I just love his like active judgment of everyone and everything throughout. Yeah. And like the writing is great for him. He delivers it great. He's a good one. And the last one I wanted to offer up is Alexei Serebrikov. He is in Nobody, which if you haven't seen is actually a really fun turn. It's like a Bob Odenkirk movie. And yeah, it's really fun if you haven't seen it. And then he was also in Leviathan, which also was pretty highly rated and popular. I didn't ever see it, but anyway, another one to check out. So those were kind of our main ones that we spend the most time with. There are certainly quite a few more characters, especially a lot of women at the strip club that have worked with her.
That was the only other one that I wanted to call out was Lindsay Normington, who plays Diamond, sort of her rival at the club,
her
who
nemesis.
Factors in, but only because she is a real life stripper, dancer, whatever term she prefers, but she was sort of the consultant. And I think that's why this is so accurate, as I said before, of this is what it's like in a club. So I think she kind of spoke to that, to the writer directors, and just made sure that everything made sense. So two jobs, good for her.
Yeah, I think let's do a quick summary, which I'm not giving away spoilers. This is in the trailer. So I just, still no spoilers, but a young escort from Brooklyn meets and impulsively marries the son of a Russian oligarch. Once the news reaches Russia, her fairy tale is threatened as his parents set out for New York to get the marriage annulled. So, pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Definitely in the trailers. I went back and watched because I was like, I don't want to give this away. This feels like a lot, but it's
You
it's
have,
not.
Though, a sense of kind of impending doom throughout the first hour when everything
for
is
sure.
super like light and happy. You're like, okay, eventually this is going to turn. Just
oh,
because
for sure.
Because
it feels like it's very like fairy tale vibes. And you're like, this is not realistic.
This doesn't end
also,
well.
Again, no spoilers. This guy doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, if you ask me. So I wouldn't have bought into it myself, but I want to just share a couple production notes, no spoilers, but some cool stuff. So $6 million budget, it did very well, especially for like a little bit more of an indie film. I mean, it had a good release, but a little bit more of an indie film, $34.8 million on a $6 million budget. So not bad, but notably premiered at Cannes and also won the Palme d'Or. So really quick Cannes explanation, if you don't know, that is the highest award. And it's confusing because there's several others. There's like a Grand Prix, there's a jury prize, there's a bunch of other prizes at Cannes. So it sounds like they're also maybe the top award. This is actually the top award. It's the Golden Palm. And so it blew the socks off of Cannes and won. And then it has had a bunch of other wins as well already. It's won a couple other awards and it's been nominated for a bunch of things. But I think that's definitely like the most notable one for sure.
Yeah.
Any other nuggets you want to share before we get into spoilers?
I think this movie, if you haven't seen this, I highly recommend it because I think what makes it special is I mentioned before, you think you know where it's going, but it never feels predictable and it's tense throughout, but it just like, I love the dynamics between the characters. So yeah, highly recommend watching this before we get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, definitely check it out. I think it's worth a watch. I mean, it's a little bit longer for some people is with the main criticism that I heard, but
The middle is a little rough,
but I think it's great. So anyway, if you want to hear us talk some more about it, it's time for spoilers, so turn around. Don't drown. It's spoiler time. All right. So, man, this is a fucking ride. I think just to start, it's a ride. And I think the first thing that stood out to me is that it is just this fairy tale gone wrong. And like you just mentioned, of this like feeling of impending doom, you definitely think that this is not going to end the way you don't know exactly where it's going to go, but you feel like it's not going to end well. I think that's kind of the obvious tone, right from the top.
Yeah. Everything happens so quick. What I noticed about this on a first watch through was the first 60 minutes is so fast paced. It's like we kind of get into the plot within 15 minutes of just, oh, here's this guy. He has the dance, you know, falls for her, whatever, invites her over, pays her for sex, but then is immediately like it ramps up to becoming exclusive. It just moves. And then even when they spend the week together, I love the way that that is edited together, where it's going from party to party and scene to scene, and it's jumping around all over the place of this crazy, lavish lifestyle. And it's simultaneously, and you'll hear me say this a bunch today, this movie does a great job of balance it. Like, it's a balancing act of several different things. And the first hour is such a cool balance of being glamorous, but still gritty in some ways.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the second act a little harder, because it's so much slower. I think that's very intentional, that everything slows down. But yeah, that first hour is just bonkers.
Yeah. And I think so. I mean, you mentioned one consultant, another consultant I wanted to call out. So like this story is actually based on a story that someone told the director, Sean Baker, about a Russian American newlywed who was kidnapped for collateral. So that is the inspiration of the story. But to complement that, I think that's part of what makes it feel kind of authentic too, right? But the consultant that he hired is also was a former sex worker. And she's actually an actress and writer. And she wrote a memoir called Modern Whore. And her name's Andrea Werhan. And she advised like about the strip club, about how you make the connections, how these people treat you, what the maneuvers are, what the like, how you interact with these, you know, high rollers, so to speak. And so, I mean, I think like you said, you get kind of dropped into this scene right from the top. And it's very intense and it's very vast. But it feels so authentic throughout. And I think that lends itself to this consultant has contributed so much to this story. And again, if you've been in a strip club, vibes with the strip club, you know, energy, and even that switch that they flip from I'm, you know, in the dressing room with the girls or what have you, which if you've never been to a strip club women's restroom, it's usually the women's restroom, which is how we know this. So there's women in there getting ready and then they go outside and they turn on the charm, right? So she's like annoyed at her boss. She doesn't want to go out there, but then she's out there and she's all smiles and she's like going to work. And I think it just, yeah, it feels really genuine that she's a part of that community and she's really immersed in that scene. And then you're just off and running. Like you buy it right away and you don't know much about her. But I think personally, that's intentional. Yeah. I feel like you're not supposed to know a lot about her and her life. You're supposed to kind of assign almost some archetypal responsibility to her of like she's representative of a community at this point rather than getting into the nitty gritty details.
It is, use the word archetype. And I think that's how I would describe it because at times I was worried, especially in the beginning, but I knew she had been nominated. So I knew it wasn't going to be this, but I was like, oh, so it's just going to be tough Brooklyn chick. And sometimes it's like throughout the film, she is just so harsh and mean, despite like being able to turn on the stripper show. But once shit picks up, she's just mean to everyone throughout the rest of the film. And so it is this very like, I think that you're right. We're not supposed to know that much about her. You're just supposed to see her as a real person. It feels real. It feels like how somebody would behave in this situation. Like they would just be fucking pissed off, frustrated, trying to work their way through it.
Well, and I think like getting into it, she meets this guy, right? She meets this son of a Russian oligarch, obviously has a lot of money, comes in there and throws some money around, takes her to Vegas, treats her, all the things. And she is skeptical to start, right? Like she's still being charming. She's still being, you know, kind of in her role. She's playing the role, right? But she's skeptical. But then you can see it kind of the wheels turning in her head of like, okay, so are we doing this? Is this for real, for real? Am I going to go and lean into this? And I feel like I see a shift in her multiple times, kind of back and forth. Cause like you said, she's got this anger and this rage later that you see that's just kind of pervasive. But what I see her doing is selling herself multiple times. And I don't mean to them. I mean, to herself, she's like, she knows that this is unlikely, right? But she's telling herself that this is going to work out. This is going to be the difference. This is the moment she is going to have her Cinderella story. And this is very much structured like a modern Cinderella story. She's saved by this wealthy man and he brings her into his universe and all this. But you can feel that almost like Grimm's fairy tale version of Cinderella coming through. Like somebody's going to start cutting off some toes and some ankles to fit into that slipper. And you feel her doing that to herself, I feel like.
Yeah, it's like a dark version of Pretty Woman as well, a little bit. Do you think this movie would be better if Richard Gere had played the young Russian 23-year-old?
I believe Richard Gere more. Yeah, for sure. He could have sold me on that for sure. Yeah. This little kid, this little twerp, I'm sorry. There's no better word for this fucking kid. He's a little twerp. And he does not sell me on shit. I mean, like, it's amazing to me that she can convince herself of this being real at all, because I'm like, this guy is an infant And he's so immature. And you show him playing video games and all this shit. He does not give Richard Gere energy of like a grown adult professional who you can trust and to be and do exactly what he says, right? And also, like, so, pet peeve,
can I tell you how much I hate it? It's really only in the first time that he's playing the video games, but pet peeve watching movies is when characters are like misusing video game controllers. And the first time he's doing it, he's like taking his thumb on and off the thumbstick. And I'm like, what the fuck game is he trying to look like he's playing? So he's terrible at video games. That's my point.
Yeah, he's terrible at a lot of things. I think we've established that. I have no idea. I can't contribute to that at all. I was like, it looks legit to me.
Seems real to me. I was going to say, tying two things that you said together of what is Anora's outlook on this? Like, how does she see this playing out? Because part of it does feel like she wants to fall for this guy. Like, she does sort of buy it. He's charming in the beginning. And it turns out when you have a shit ton of money and no job and you can do whatever you want and take your friends anywhere, it's easy to be charming and like silly and stuff. But I found myself thinking, like, does she actually like this guy, or is she just seeing an opportunity? Because by the end, she's almost trying to spin it into like, well, I'm taking half of his money. I don't think that was her end game. But was this just her being like, well, I'll never have to dance again, I'll have a better life? Or how much of it was actually emotion-based?
Well, I think that's like the heart of the film, right? I think the heart of the film is, are all of these relationships, any of them, right? The relationship she ends up kind of having with these henchmen a little bit, with her friends, with her family, with her, you know, former coworkers at the strip club, with him, are all of these relationships transactional? And is that a valid way to move through the world, right? And I think part of what Sean Baker's doing as a filmmaker is holding a lens onto sex work in general and a lot of his work, and you'll see this theme as you watch more of his stuff, is that sex work is valid. It's a totally valid profession. It's a profession. The oldest profession, as they say. Like, let a girl get her, you know, paper. Who gives a shit, right?
So, or a guy.
Or a guy, right? In this case, girl. But she's just out here. She's working, right? She's fucking working. And also, at what point is it valid for her to say, to your point, doesn't really matter if I love him that much, right? Like, we're having a good time. He's paying the bills. And if he keeps doing that, my life will be better. And that's the biggest get. That's the best. You know, I did my job really well. And how much of it is her feeling like, hey, I did my job really well, and that's good enough for me? And how much of it is her saying, I am not my profession. I am not a sex worker. I am not just a stripper. I want to find love. And I'm going to tell myself that this is love for that reason. Right. Yeah. I think you see that push pull with her kind of throughout.
Yeah, it's. I think it's meant to be sort of undetermined. It's for us to sort of think through, because she's a complex character, which is what we want in film. It all does feel very transactional in the beginning, because you think about, first off, I'm like, was this the one time that a guy in a strip club has gotten the stripper's number? Typically, they tell you, like, look, the stripper does not love you. That's not how this works. But gives the number. But then it's like, well, that was really just because she was going to go over there and he was going to pay for sex. And there was like a negotiation on the cost of that. They do that. And sure. Then, hey, will you be my girlfriend for a week? I'll pay you X amount of money to take off work for this week.
Yeah.
Even the proposal, she's like 3 carats. Like, she knows what she wants to get out of
it. It's a negotiation. Everything's a negotiation with her. And like, psh, girl, get it, right? She is a strong businesswoman. Right. Mm-hmm. At this point, she's not doing anything for free. She's setting the terms in advance, and she's aware of what she's going to get out of it and what they're going to get out of it. And you can tell that she, early on especially, does see it as very transactional. She's not leaning into like, this would be a real get, you know. It's more when he does propose that you see her start to falter a little. And she does immediately, like you said, she takes it right back to, okay, well, this is a negotiation. But you see that split second of her being like, wait a minute, you know, is this for real?
So that's kind of like, I would say that's the first 60-ish minutes of the movie, maybe 45 is what everything we just talked about of this build of their relationship. I wasn't expecting Ivan to disappear for the next, I don't know, 70 minutes of the film. So that's, again, it feels like the first hour of the movie and the second hour, you're watching almost two different films because the pacing changes.
I think so. Yeah.
We go from this super fast pace to now when the henchmen get involved. I hate calling them the henchmen because they're good guys throughout most of the film.
For Russian thugs, quote unquote, they're like not what you expect. They're all pretty lovely, actually.
And that was one of my favorite things was, I wrote this down of after 30 minutes, we spend this really tense time. This is where they could have trimmed some of the fat from the movie because it does go on a little long, but it's like we're in that house, the living room with them and her after Ivan has fled the scene for like 25 literally
25 minutes.
Okay, 25.
Yeah.
That you're never, that I wrote down long. That I'm not sure how much danger she's actually in because the guys seem friendly enough. In your like American brain watching a film like this, you're expecting them to come in guns blazing, strike her, beat the shit out of Ivan. That's what you're expecting to happen. And it's just this tense standoff where she is also escalating and causing injury and harm. And it took my expectations and flipped them on their head. Like, it was great.
Yeah. I think fun fact for y'all, the film shot in 37 days, 10 of which were in that home. So in that scene, shooting that 25 minute stretch, which does feel kind of long. What I will give it is that it's fucking funny. You know, it's like, it's when you start to really feel the tone of the film and you feel, like you said, you're watching different movies at different points. And I feel like this is the tonal shift of, this is going to be a screwball comedy almost for the second half. Right. And I read something somebody called out and I could not have resonated with it more. It felt like a very Howard Hawks film. And Howard Hawks, for reference, if you guys listen to Classic Month, you know, he's His Girl Friday. But he also did like The Big Sleep, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, so on and so forth. And a lot of those have that like screwball comedy element to them. And you do feel that kind of shift in this scene later as they're going, trying to find Ivan. Ivan running out the way that he does feels like that, right? Where they're just like, is he seriously physically running away? You know, and it's laughable.
You got Garnick like slipping on the ice right away. Yeah. Just, yeah.
Again, very screwball comedy-esque and not where you expect this tone to go at all. You expect it to be darker. You expect it to be scarier. But what I will say is that she is very like, she's a very Hawksian type of woman. Like, his characters are also very strong, very assertive, strong, tough women. And that is where you see that shift in her as well. Like, I'm not going to take this lying down. Yes, I know who you guys are. I know you're thugs. I know you're here to control us, manipulate us, whatever, or force us out. I'm not going down without a fight. I'm going to go down swinging, if anything. And it just manifests in this really fascinating scene, I think, honestly.
Yeah, the bickering and the fighting in that was equal parts scary. Because again, at that point, you're not sure what these men are capable of. But also hilarious because she's like, it felt like Home Alone. Like, she's kicking these men's ass because they're underestimating her or like they're really not wanting to hurt her.
Don't want to hurt her. Yes. Yeah. But they expect her to not fight back as hard. And I think that's how, you know, the table breaks. And like, I just love, he comes in and he's like, what the fuck is happening? And Igor's like, you don't understand. Okay. Like, she is feisty. And then Garnick is like, you do not get it. You deal with her. You know, they're all like, she is a crazed, you know, a crazed woman. And she's attacking us. She's attacking us. We didn't do it, you know. But I like that Tauros is upset because he thinks that they might have hurt her, right? That's actually a little bit more what his reaction is. And I think that is such an important tonal shift of, this guy does not think it's acceptable to have walked into violence against a woman, right? And that's, It's such a assuring shift in the film. It feels like you can actually, at least as a woman, you can relax now because you're like, they're not trying to hurt her, you know?
You think they're henchmen. Really what they are employees or like handlers, right? So they are trying to control this spoiled brat and get him to do. And you could see that they are more afraid of the consequences for themselves from, you know, powers that be in that situation of the punishment that they'll get if they don't get the shit under control. Mm-hmm. So you kind of end up empathizing with them a little bit if they're having to deal with this difficult situation. This kid's missing. His wife is giving them all this hell and they're just trying to do their fucking jobs. So poor Garnick gets his nose broken and he either gets a concussion from either that or falling on the ice. I don't know. But just his progression throughout this of like, he starts talking nonsense. He gets the drugs in his system. The vomit, I have never seen that style of, it was like frothy and it was so much. I don't know what effect they use on that, but I've never seen that in film, that type of vomit.
It was so good. He was so good. He was so funny. And he was just like, I just loved seeing his like patience dwindling with this whole thing. And like you said, I think calling out importantly that they are just employees, right? Mm-hmm. They just work for this fucking billionaire oligarch. This is the thing that they hate most about this job is wrangling this fucking kid. And they're like, how have we gotten ourselves into this mess? I mean, just imagine being this grown ass man who just got a concussion from some random sex worker that he's like, how is this my life? And that I feel like is what is coming through from Garnick the whole time of just this realization of like, what the fuck? You know, he's just this upset.
This is a weird back reference, but when we did His Girl Friday, this movie has a lot of that multiple conversations happening at the same time, whether it's mm-hmm. when they're in the living room or when they're in the car. There's like one conversation in the back seat, one in the front seat. Sometimes one is in Russian, so you're looking at subtitles for that while listening to the mm-hmm. English people in the back. Like, I thought that was very cool, but there are just so many little throwaway lines, especially from Garnick. Mm-hmm. Not so much from Igor, because he's more quiet.
He's quiet.
But just his little like complaints, and he's just so fed up. And those just the humorous beats in that are really what make that second act more bearable for the length of it, right? Is like without that humor and just seeing these inept kind of employee, not even inept, but just these poor guys getting their asses beaten on this hopeless chase.
Yeah, it's just, it is. It's this hopeless chase. And I think this is a good time to point out of like, we've mentioned His Girl Friday a few times, but this is actually part of what I think makes it a strong film is that you feel these references. And one of the things that Greta Gerwig actually, who was the president of Cannes this year that it won, was one of the things she called out was that we felt collectively that we were transported by this movie. It felt both new and in conversation with older forms of cinema. There was something about it that reminded us of the classic structures of Lubitsch and Howard Hanks. And then it did something completely truthful and unexpected. And two, it does call out that you can feel that throughout this film of like, it's not just this modern take on this, you know, mob Russian oligarch sex worker story. He is a filmmaker, is referencing these other styles. One that stood out to me too was like the French Connection. It gives me a really good like 1970s French Connection vibe. That's a neo-noir thriller.
If you take the cell phones out of this movie could take place in the 70s. Just the vibe of it.
It totally could. It's got that grit to it. It's got that, you know, it's shot beautifully. I think the cinematography is gorgeous, but it also in certain parts feels like a rough cut, you know, but I think that's intentional. And again, I think that's some of that like film noir, that grittiness is there. And so I can point to like four different decades of film, right, that you can see some themes here. And I think that's part of what makes it so interesting. But like you said, he's even, you know, he's got you invested in this chase. This chase that feels like it might be fruitless, because I think that's the next part of the story that I really like, where you're just like, are they ever going to find him? You know, you're just like, they're running around all over Brooklyn. They try all these places. They disrupt these places that they go to. They go back. They kind of retrace their footsteps, and everyone is staying up all night. Right. And they're keeping Garnick up, and he's pissed. He's like, I just want to go to sleep. I have a concussion. My nose is broken, you know? And they're like, no, we're going to find this fucking kid.
Yeah.
And you're just along for the ride, you know? And it feels like you're along for the ride.
It's that middle section where it's meant to feel aimless. We're meant to feel this, like, as you just pointed out, we're meant to feel like, yeah, this is a lost fucking cause. You're not going to find a guy in New York City. They're going
who's unreachable, untraceable, can't call him.
We're going to have every friend call on their cell phone, and it's going straight to voicemail. Like, I do think they could have cut at least one of those scenes out of that middle part. Yeah. But as things ramp up, again, it doesn't do what you expect it to do. It's when there's all these arguments going on throughout the film. It is, again, very uncut gemsy of these tense standoffs, whether it's in the I forget where they go, where the guy, he grabs the microphone, Toros, and like people are getting pissed off there, and then he's yelling at kids in the diner, and then the tow truck scene gets intense. To pull out a gun for a fight to happen. It never does.
They do not default to that. I love
that's more like real life, honestly. I think in most cases, guys in particular love talking shit and like getting in people's faces, but like it never comes to blows. And I think this movie's pretty accurate in that people are just assholes sometimes.
I think it's such a simple point, but I think it's so critical to understand, like, these are just people doing their jobs. Every single one of them is just doing their job except this twerp. And they're in these situations where it lends themselves to be assholes to each other, right? Like, mm-hmm. would these people be talking to each other this way under any other circumstances? Probably not. They just all have differing motives at this exact right. moment. And these guys, it reminds me so much of my old job. Like I was saying, my old industry that I was in, I worked for a number of billionaires and a number of millionaires. And I'm pretty sure my NDA is still enforceable, so I won't say names, but you would know who they are. And the people that work for them are your best friend until you are in mm-hmm. this type of situation, right? I have never been spoken to worse than when we have pissed off a billionaire's executive assistant, right? Or if you haven't executed a project on time or what have you. And these guys are only being assholes because their boss is going to be an asshole to them. Right. Yeah. And that's what it comes down to, is they're afraid of their boss. And I think that is even somewhat upended. The expectation around that is even upended later when you find out who they're actually afraid of. Right. They're not
right.
really afraid of dad. They're really afraid of mom. Everyone's afraid of mom. Right.
And that's like the first time where you see that she's sort of the brains of the operation, and you do get an actual sort of threat from her. And granted, it's not what you expect. It's not, we'll kill everyone you love because we're the Russian mob. It is just like, I'll ruin your fucking life.
I'll ruin your life financially, yeah. your friends' lives. Mm-hmm. And it's a much more real and tactical threat if you think about it. And I think that's why everyone's so afraid of her. They're like, she's not going to kill me. She's going to make my life miserable. And how much worse is that, you know? And she just really leans into that. And it sort of gives, you know, coming back to the twerp that we're following around all over Kingdom Come, he's a little bitch because he's afraid of his mom, mm-hmm. you know? And but that's one of the things I love about Annie, is like, she calls him out, you know, when this all comes to fruition. I think there's a couple important notes there. One, she finds him back at the beginning, right? He's back at the strip club. Of course he's there. He's fucking around with insert new sex worker stripper here. And somebody else is seeing it as their opportunity as well, right? This is my right. transaction now. And so you see it kind of switch gears, and he's exactly who, you know, you kind of thought he was. So checks out, but then they're going, you know, to the airport and they have to get on this plane. And she just tells him, like, talk to me. You need to talk to me. Are we doing this? Are we going to get a divorce? Are you not going to say anything? All the things. She's taking all the power in all of those rooms. She's asserting herself to his mom. She's introducing herself, saying they're in love. She's doing all these things to defend and fight for them. And he's just quiet. He won't say anything. And she calls him out and she's like, be a fucking man and talk to me. And he turns around and he's exactly, again, the little twerp that you think he is. And he's like, are you stupid? Are you stupid? What did you think was going to happen? And you see a shift there as well. Like, it's an immediate shift.
Yeah, that sort of, I guess we're kind of in like the third act here, which is after they find mm-hmm. Ivan and we get this sequence of different events. There's some great scenes there of the one you just mentioned where they're getting on the plane. I think the courtroom scene is incredible. Just the tension there of people, Toros yeah. yelling from the crowd with the security there trying to like calm mm-hmm. him down. You have Ivan passing out like on the table, the judge trying to keep yeah. order. Like, again, there's a lot going on and it's very uncomfortable, but you get that one. Obviously, when they're flying on the airplane and it's just, there's a lot of tension in there and they're screaming across and the parents are talking to him. And then we get sort of the bonding moment between Igor and Annie where he's just trying to, again, be just very apologetic about the whole thing. He's very yeah. sympathetic to what she's going through. So,
and I think you see that at the plane, right? Because again, when I think about that trip, I mean, that flight, they're, you know, he says that thing to her about like, yes, of course. Are you stupid? And you see her kind of, her face fall, and kind of briefly, like it doesn't last long, but you see her face kind of fall of like, oh shit, you're not going to stand up for this. You're not going to do anything about it. Right. And then he shifts and goes, thanks for making my last trip fun. That's how he sees it. Is this was a fun little adventure and I'm just going to get it annulled and nothing's going to happen to me, really.
No consequence.
And yeah. And I see her and she shifts back into that tone. She's like, yeah, mm-hmm. you have fun. She has this voice that you're like, oof, them walls are going up. She's taking a different tact now. She has like mentally shifted the way she's going to handle the situation. That's when she starts to threaten the mom, right? With a lawsuit. No, I'm going to take him for half, whatever. But what I think is so interesting, that's a great scene. What I think is so interesting about that scene is Igor's face. Like, speaking back to his face and his performance, he is feeling bad for her this whole night. You know, he's very like, this is brutal. We're dragging this girl all over Brooklyn trying to find this piece of shit who totally scammed her, because of course he did. And then he sees her do that to the mom, whatever her name is, and he's proud of her. He's like rooting for her. He says nothing, but you can see it all over his face that he's like impressed. He thinks it's awesome that she's trying to stand up to this person. And he's just, his whole reaction to that scene. And then it shifts to once she's threatened her and she gets on the plane, that just empathy, it's all over his face. He feels so bad for her. And he has said zero words. He said zero words.
He's just doing little things throughout. You know, he pours her the vodka, just hands it to her. She drinks it. They don't, there's no thank you again. Annie does not, at no point does she stop being Annie. I love that, of just like, no, this is a shit 24 hours. So she's going to be tired and she's going to stay just as rude as she's been this time. She's not going to be apologetic to him after what's happened between them. But yeah, just, I think there's some actors and actresses out there who can do so much with facial mannerisms. I think Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights, and he was in that J.J. Abrams movie, Super 8, where he just can do these little things where he doesn't have to speak, but he'll just make a little expression. Wolf of Wall Street's another good one with him. But I think this Yura Borisov playing Igor here, same thing. Just that whole conversation, you could see his smile kind of appear, his eyes get kind of, you know, they squint when he's worried about her. But you could, I love when you can just read it, but it's not intentionally obvious. It's subtle.
And you get this subtle build of he's a good guy. Like, yes, they're all not bad guys. That's great. But beyond them not being bad guys, you're learning slowly that Igor is a good guy and cares about her and wants to make sure she's safe and is just being a gentleman to her. And she's not super receptive because, again, the whole night is about her being dragged all over Brooklyn. Like, you'd be pissed and rude too. Like, I'd be a real dick about it as well, right? And so she's in a shit mood. She's not gonna be polite to people over what she's being dragged through, but she's softer with him even. Like, she's not effusive and kind, but she's not as abrasive to him. And you see that, like, their relationship slowly soften. And it's this shift in, like you said, this pretty woman type of story that has shifted to like, oh, maybe he's Richard Gere, right? Like, maybe he's the guy, not little twerp guy, because obviously. Yeah. And so I think you start to root for that, but you also know that she has been through some shit. Like, this has been a roller coaster. This has been a whirlwind. She doesn't feel like she's ready for that, which I think informs this next interaction with them of he is on her side. He takes her back to the mansion, which, fun fact, did actually belong to a Russian oligarch billionaire back in the day, and takes her back there, and you get one more scene there. And again, I like the cyclical nature of this story that we're telling. And they have this kind of just chill, intimate night. Like, nothing happens, right? But it feels intimate and caring in its own way. Simple shit, like a blanket, right? I'm throwing a blanket over to you, you know?
I like that scene. It does, again, it goes on a little long, but I kind of like it because it feels natural. They're not delivering their lines to get the scene over with. It feels slow. They're getting high, just staring. I love that they're just staring at the TV as they talk.
A couple people watching TV. Yeah, getting high, watching TV. Yeah.
And I enjoy how they have these little moments where you think, oh, they're becoming friends now. They're getting friendly. But then she'll say something mean to him just to put him back down, because I was, as much as you're rooting for this dynamic to be how this plays out, I didn't want her to turn around and be like, no, I'm in love with him 24 hours later, because that doesn't feel real. So I enjoy the way that scene plays out. And then obviously the ending the next day, I think, is beautifully shot, first of all, with the snow and all that. But that, what were your thoughts on sort of the way things play out in the car, the ring, him taking her bags, and then sort of what we end on?
Well, so yeah, I agree. I think you don't want her to immediately be in love with him because it doesn't feel genuine. But I think you have to take a hard look at the fact that none of this has been genuine for her, right? She's been selling herself on this possible opportunity, is what I would say she looks at it as. And I think part of why she's mean to him, even when he's being kind to her, is because of that, right? Is because I've been all in on this situation for a hot minute, and I can't just switch gears, even when she likes him. And I think it's actually her reaction to herself where she snaps at him, right? If they've had a moment of connection or a moment of intimacy, she snaps at him to bring herself back, I think. I think it's, I can't go there. I don't want to go there, right? Yeah. I've been through some shit. And so again, that felt very genuine of like, how would you process this? You wouldn't be able to just switch gears right away. But then she offers herself up to him in the car, right? And it feels both like one of the most transactional things to happen in the film and the least at the same time. And that's what I think is really interesting and really hard to capture in that moment of there is something genuine there, but this is also what she seems to feel like she owes because mm-hmm. he has helped her, right? He got her the ring, he got her money back, you know, all these things. And so she's been in this transactional world this whole time, right? And before this whole thing happened. So, okay, I owe you one is what it feels like. And he doesn't want that, right?
Right.
And I think that's the shift of that makes her have to accept that she doesn't really want that to be that way either.
Yeah. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. In fact, the director and Mikey have both been very like vague on what they think the ending represents. And I think that's intentional, but I also think it's intentional that they choreographed this where there's no kissing during that final sex scene. So it is mm-hmm. sex, but there's not that level of intimacy.
But he wants to.
And he tries to, and that's when she kind of right. grabs his hand, like pulls away, and then breaks right. down crying. So I think that is very telling in her reaction to that.
Yeah, I think she, again, like we keep referencing Pretty Woman, which I think is a very relevant comparison, but it is that like, if I kiss you, this is no longer a transaction. There are right. feelings involved, right? But I think she wants to kiss him is kind of my read. But she can't because again, like she feels like this is a tip for tat. This is a, you know, I got red in my ledger kind of thing. I gotta even this out. Mm-hmm. And so she doesn't feel like she can like just have feelings. She can't just have feelings about this person. And I think he hasn't judged her for any of this. I think that's the thing that I think is most telling about this film and this moment is that he hasn't judged her for anything that she has done. Getting the ring, the fur coats, the money, the sex work to begin with. He has no problems with that. He doesn't see or think any less of her as a result. And he feels, I think, like it's okay for him to have feelings for her. She's just a woman. She's just a woman that he likes and has spent time with and thinks is interesting. And she doesn't have that freedom, I think, in this moment. And I think that's the culmination of that interaction.
Yeah, I love the ending. I mean, not that it's happy, but like, I don't love how I feel watching the ending, but I think it's a perfect ending for this film. And we can imagine maybe what life is like for these two folks 6 months later. Maybe it is a happier ending to come. But yeah, mm-hmm. I like that they sort of leave it up to the viewer to decide.
Yeah, I think, I mean, anything where you can interpret it your own way is always to me more fun. Mm-hmm. I think the way I look at that moment is her opportunity potentially for actual connection that is not rooted in a transaction. She can maybe get that with him. Will it actually happen because of all the other pieces of this equation? Maybe not. But I think it's kind of that flicker of hope of maybe she can, you know? And I think that's what makes it a really compelling film and a compelling ending, you know?
Yeah.
I think one thing I wanted to share too is that our dear guest, Neil Reddy, who was on here last week, this was one of the conversations that we deep dived in the DMs about that I think got him onto the pod. But he thought this movie was wildly overhyped. But I also think he had some good points. One of the things he said was that it was like Pretty Woman in Euphoria style, which I wanted to ask you, have you seen Euphoria?
I've heard things about Euphoria, but yeah. I haven't watched it, no.
I've watched like a couple episodes and I couldn't get through it. So I was curious. Like, I didn't know if you liked it.
It's all about drugs, but...
Yeah. But I agreed with him on his call out about it's way too long. And then he mentioned that it's, you know, he doesn't know anything about her as a character or what her motivation is. But we talked about that a little bit. But one of the things I did want to bring up that he mentioned that I thought was interesting and we haven't talked about at all was he said that the male gaze was so strong in it. And he said it took him out of it multiple times. And I was curious what your thoughts were, because it's interesting to me. Like, I didn't, I mean, I listen, it's a strip club and there's a lot of sex scenes and there's gratuitous sex and ass shots and all the things and whatever, like, sure. But I also just thought those were the environments that we were in. And
exactly. I think it's a product of the setting.
Okay. I didn't think much of it, but I was curious. I wanted to bring it up.
I had written down, did we see more of Mikey Madison or Margaret Qualley in Oscar nominated films this year? Because I feel like The Substance, we talked about that too, of the whole emphasis is you're going to get a more beautiful body. Right. And they spend so much time literally just showing you male gaze throughout that film. And that's sort of the point. I think it's the same thing here where, yes, it's a movie about strippers. And to be fair, we do get a naked dude backflip in bed, which I thought was pretty impressive. So
yeah,
good for you, Ivan. Very flexible.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. And at least, you know, here's my thing is it's all about like equality. I do think there should be some equality in exposure here. Personally, there's not that much here. So I don't think it's even by any means for sure. But I do think it's kind of supposed to be the product of this person and their role in the contexts that we are in by and large.
Yeah. And I would honestly, I would disagree with Neil on that. I think we know exactly what Annie's motivation is. I think we talked pretty in depth about the fact that she is climbing, like she is a transactional professional. Yeah. So,
and I think that's an easy assumption to make. Like, could you interpret it differently? Sure, but I would read it as I feel like I know what her motivations are. I also feel like I know that her motivations change, and that's okay too, because I don't think anybody has one singular motivation, right, in every single situation. And so I think it's interesting to watch her progress and change throughout.
I will but agree I on the length. The length, they could have cut probably 20 or 30 minutes from this and I would have been fine with it.
I agree. I will say that. I think, like, I would rather that first scene in the mansion be cut a bit and that second scene in the mansion is a little long, but it's okay if those other things are cut a bit. Like you said, like kind of the traipsing through Brooklyn, there's some of that could be trimmed. The mansion thing I think could be trimmed, but I really enjoyed that scene of them in the mansion. She's in a t-shirt, they're chilling, getting high, watching TV. And it's this moment where they're kind of bonding. And, you know, if you take out, if you're considering the male gaze here, this doesn't feel like that at all. She's like, she's covered up, right? And they're having one of their most intimate moments in this moment. So I like the length of that scene. I think it does a lot for it. But yeah, I agree. I think there are other areas that we could definitely trim.
Yeah, so. It gets a little, not majorly, but there are, like I said earlier, there's some parts that get a little repetitive. The chasing down the friends, getting the cell phones when they're in the house and like they fight a little, then it chills out, then they fight again, then it chills out. And it is comedic. But it's kind of a law of diminishing returns on some of that stuff.
And I think it does get repetitive multiple times, but you're still engaged because I will give Madison credit here. I feel like she's kind of keeping you engaged. Yeah. She's keeping you entertained, even at those moments where it feels like, okay, we already did this. Mm-hmm. She's giving such a strong performance that I think it can hold up. It still does, you know, pretty well overall. So yeah, suffice it to say, I really enjoyed this film. I don't know what else it showed up against at Cannes necessarily. So I don't know if it's deserving of that award or it's deserving of Best Picture, which it is nominated for. But I still think it's a great movie. But all that being said, what is your rating?
This is one where I feel like I say this a lot on the pod. It's one where I'm happy to have watched it, but I don't know that I want to watch it again anytime soon because it is... Like Uncut Gems, I had to wait a year to rewatch that movie because of just the tension and the anxiety inducing. This one is you know, a few rungs down the ladder from that in terms of anxiety. But it was an interesting experience, very emotional. It does play out almost as three different movies to me of the vibes throughout the thirds of the film. And I enjoyed it. I would cut, like I said, some time. My gut's telling me like 7.5, 8. Probably an 8 for a first watch, but I think if I sat down and rewatched it, I'd probably go down to 7.5. But I'll give it an 8 because first watch was pretty damn enjoyable.
Yeah, I think I gave it a 7.5 really in my head. I had a good time with it. I think part of why I came out of it feeling like it was a 7.5 too was that I do believe it was really hyped. And so when I saw it in theaters, I was like expecting this just groundbreaking, crazy, and it was very good, and it does upend your expectations in great ways. But I think I just expected a little more based on everything I had heard, and so I probably would have given it an 8 or even an 8.5 maybe if I hadn't heard anything about it. But I still had a really good time, and I love Sean Baker. I think he's a great filmmaker, and I love what he does for the message that, again, this work is valid. And if this is, as long as you are doing this work as a choice, right, this is a choice that you have made, then you should be empowered to do it. And at the very least, even if you are in this work, maybe not preferable, but you need to be in this work, as long as you are safe and making this choice autonomously, then you don't deserve to be judged for it. And I like that you go out of every single one of these films with, they're not any lesser than for having done this. And I like that in this film, Igor represents that of like, he still really likes her at the end of the day. And despite everything that
the only people in this movie that seem to judge her for what she does professionally are the villains, right? Everyone else in this is super like cool with it and chill. It's just like, yeah, that's what you do. Awesome.
And even Toros by the end of it, I feel like he respects her. You know what I mean? He's annoyed with her for sure. But I think by the end of it, he's like, listen, I get it, girl. We're all just out here doing the work, you know? Yeah. And he's like, I'm just doing my job. You're doing your job. Like, we're cool. You know what I mean? I feel like if they ran into each other at a bar, they'd have a drink. You know what I mean?
Hey, remember that time? That one night we spent together? I was going to give an award to, speaking of jobs, Yura, aka Igor, for the most impressive sandwich eating in film that I've ever, just the big ass bites he's taking, and he's got his mouth full like a hamster, and he's arguing with her across the table, still like having a conversation.
And words are still coming out. I'm impressed. Like, he's got a lot. He got a lot of capacity in there. You were like, I can't believe I can understand you. This is amazing. But yeah, no, it was a good time. Highly, if you couldn't tell, guys, we highly recommend it. It was a good time, fun watch. So thanks for joining us. This one was fun for, I think, both of us. Come back next week for another one that I personally think is really interesting and compelling as well. Flow, which is an animated feature as well.
It's a little different. Definitely a little different from other animated films you've seen recently.
Very different in a number of ways. So anyway, we'll get into that. But for now,
you can follow us on our socials, Instagram, TikTok, if that still exists. But yeah, tag us, follow
when
us
you hear this, maybe we'll exist, maybe not, who knows.
We'll see. But yeah, follow us on Instagram. We put a lot of reels and stuff on there. You can also watch video now on YouTube. So if you want to see our pretty hungover faces today, as we discussed Honora, go ahead and do that. And yeah, you can always email us at wedrinkandwewatchthingspod@gmail.com. I actually wanted to call this out because I don't know how we're supposed to do this. I fucked up on our It Follows episode, and I got some news from my friend Ashley that I was wrong on one of my thoughts or theories on the movie. And I'm like,
about to do a correction?
I was like, how do I do that? Because I'm not going to go back and tack it on to the end of the episode, because then we lose data and stuff. But essentially what I had, some of my theories during that was that Jay was a virgin to start the film, and apparently she was not. So just wanted to acknowledge, I can admit when I make a mistake, that she did not lose her virginity with that first sex scene in It Follows. That's my bad.
I mean, she was in college, so I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently she has a line of dialogue where she mentions that she has slept with people before, so it was not her having sex for the first time and then this bad thing happening. So that theory kind of goes out the window. But I think a lot of the other tied in points still stand. So if you want to correct us on anything, we fuck up anything, go ahead and email us.
Email us at WeDrinkWeWatchThingsPod. Yeah. Apparently
thank you, Ashley, for watching It Follows better than I did.
Yes. Thank you for the clarity. Obviously, I didn't correct him because I didn't like that movie. So anyway.
Just your opinion needs correcting.
My opinion needs correcting. All right. Well, for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.